Hey leaders, Em here. We're finalizing Marty's 2024 speaking calendar and he still has a few opportunities available. Now you've experienced the impact that Marty has on the podcast, but that's only a tiny fraction of the impact that he has when he delivers an in-person keynote presentation. If you'd like to book Marty to speak at your organization's event, go to martingmore.com or send us an email at hello@martingmore.com and we can chat about how to tailor his powerful message to your leaders to achieve real results. All right, now back to the episode. Welcome to the No Bullshit Leadership Podcast. In a world where knowledge has become a commodity, this podcast is designed to give you something more. Access to the experience of a successful CEO who has already walked the path. So join your host, Martin Moore, who will unlock and bring to life your own leadership experiences and accelerate your journey to leadership excellence.
Hey there, and welcome to episode 297 of the No Bullshit Leadership Podcast. This week's episode, Making Yourself Indispensable. Will it protect your job? For as long as I can remember, the business media has been awash with stories about the job market. How to get a job, how to keep a job, how to juggle your job with other demands, and how to climb the corporate ladder. Since the COVID pandemic, it seems as though the volume of this advice has grown exponentially. Now, the most recent article to catch my eye from the Wall Street Journal was about the concept of indispensability. And shock horror, the startling revelation that this might not necessarily provide you with the bulletproof job security that you were hoping for. Well, of course, anyone who's been in a senior leadership role or lived through an M&A transaction will have learnt this truth firsthand. There's no such thing as an indispensable employee, as ruthless employers have been trying to teach us for decades. We should probably start to listen to them. Interestingly, the indispensability landscape looks very different depending on whether you're a technical specialist or a leader. So assuming that I'm talking to leaders, how should you approach this conundrum? What does it mean to you and your team? I'm going to start with a brief summary of the Wall Street Journal article. I'll then give you some observations and perspectives about what it might mean to be indispensable. And I'll finish with my three hot tips for how to make yourself incredibly valuable without trying to be indispensable. So, let's get into it. In what I'm sure was expected to be a groundbreaking revelation, the Wall Street Journal recently published an article that uncovered a not-so-surprising truth: that being indispensable won't save your job. Now, anyone in senior management has known this for years, but apparently, the penny is just dropping for many people who are learning this lesson the hard way. And as much as this was always the case, it's even more the case today. The primary tenet of the article is that there's really no such thing as being indispensable. If you strive to be untouchable, it can backfire, and in some cases, it can even invite exploitation. Although it seems counterintuitive, consistently doing more than what's expected won't make a difference when the cost-cutting begins. One woman, who was interviewed for the article, described her experience of having lost several jobs, and she resolved that she wouldn't let that happen again. So she took another job, working remotely as it turns out. And she adopted the strategy of trying to make herself indispensable by picking up additional tasks that she knew bogged other people down. But when the headcount in her department was reduced from 13 to 3, she got her marching orders all the same. The article points to the fact that managers have become much more aware of indispensability techniques, like knowledge hoarding. If you don't share your knowledge, you're putting a flashing neon light over your head that says, "I am a risk to the ongoing performance of my team." If you get hit by a bus, the team is screwed because no one else can easily step into your role. This is detrimental to the team, and it's really obvious to everyone. So the article concludes that bosses prefer team players. Knowledge hoarding is a symptom that informs the broader category of key person risk. Good managers are pretty aware of this, and they seek to reduce the risk to the team that's posed by key people potentially leaving. Now, many key people are happy to share what they know, but they've built up rare knowledge and expertise over a lifetime in their field. leaders have an obligation to minimize risk of skill loss. But this is harder than it might seem. If you're managing key person risk really well, it should be pretty difficult for anyone to make themselves indispensable. All of this says to me, don't rely on perceptions of indispensability to keep your job safe. When push comes to shove, you're going to be in the crosshairs no matter what. One woman interviewed for the article suggested not relying on a single income source to diversify your sources of income. But this too has its risks. I think we can safely say that trying to build up any level of indispensability is unlikely to have the desired effect, and it may even work against you. I just want to give you a couple of practical observations about this article. Now, as I said, I've never really believed that trying to make yourself indispensable is a good idea, even if you could do that in theory. If I ever saw one of my direct reports becoming a little arrogant or behaving with an air of indispensability, I would pull them aside quietly and I'd ask them to take the test. This is my foolproof indispensability test. So I'd say to them, look, Harry, go home tonight and get one of those 5-gallon plastic buckets you use around the house and fill it about halfway with water. Then roll your sleeve up to the elbow, make a fist with your hand, and put your arm into the water until your fist is resting on the bottom of the bucket. Now, pull your arm out really fast and look at the water. If you can see where your arm was, that means you're indispensable. Now look, no one's indispensable. I never was. No one who worked for me ever was. And when some people leave, sure, it really hurts, but you get over it and you move on. What I came to learn over my years in large corporations is that they are unbelievably resilient to mistakes and to mediocrity. And when I say mediocrity, I mean ill-formed strategy that causes profitable customers to flee. Self-interested politicians in very senior roles who add little value. Poor decisions that squander millions upon millions of dollars. And a dearth of leadership, which results in a workforce that performs at 60% of its potential capacity at best. Now, I'm not saying this to be negative. It's the most clinical observation I can make after years of being on the inside of these large corporations. And look, I suspect your observations wouldn't be too dissimilar. So when really good people lose their jobs, guess what? The company goes on. Maybe not as fast, maybe not as well, maybe leaving a bunch of upside on the table, maybe with a higher risk profile, but it generally survives just fine. If you ever find yourself thinking, how could the company do this without me? Well, trust me, they'll work it out. I had my first exposure to the indispensability myth very early in my executive career. I was working for a mining company that was the target of a semi-hostile takeover. As chief information officer, I was running IT and technology. The acquiring company had hired a bunch of consultants to assist with the technology restructure. Now, the first time I met with them, they presented me with the hierarchy chart of my group and proceeded to walk me through which roles were going to be made redundant. They had no idea who the people were or what value was being delivered by each department. It was a desktop exercise that was about numbers, not capability. They just took a red pen to it. Now, fortunately, they were pretty smart guys and they listened reasonably well. So I was able to influence them just a little over the course of the ensuing months. But they were ultimately right. The restructure and redundancy program didn't negatively impact the merged company's performance. Sure, they lost some upside potential, the risk increased, but the business ran really well all the same, and the share price skyrocketed over the course of the next few years. Now, I want to make six key points that I hope will convince you to completely abandon the concept of trying to make yourself indispensable. The first is, focusing on indispensability breeds a scarcity mentality. So in other words, how do I not lose what I have? This puts you on defense instead of offense. To have a successful and fulfilling career, you need the exact opposite. You need to adopt and abundance mentality. I used to flip the script on indispensability. As long as I'm essential to the working of the team, I can't be promoted or moved to another role. I want to make myself redundant as quickly as I can so that I either get moved up or find my next role somewhere else. This always put me in the headspace of abundance and not scarcity. And the opportunities, well, they presented themselves accordingly. The second point is, it's now even harder to be indispensable. Working from home makes things so much more difficult, and it magnifies an already vexed problem. The upside of work from home is that you can work flexibly, and that means less hours and you work when you want. But be really careful what you wish for. It also means you'll have less personal connection with your boss. She won't know you as well. The contact is less frequent and it's less personal. And if your boss is a weak leader, he'll likely hide behind the technology, which is why we've seen a spate of sackings and redundancies via email and Zoom. The third point is that trying to be indispensable pushes you to work below your level. Now let's take this abundance posture a step further. If you were actually indispensable, it would imply that you had some knowledge or expertise that no one else had, which means you have to control something really tightly, which means you're probably not working at the right level. As a leader, you need to be pushing up against the floor of your boss's role, not crashing through the ceiling of your team's roles. Indispensability requires detailed knowledge, so it's likely to push you below the level that you've been hired to operate at. And if you do manage to become indispensable, there's where you'll stay. The fourth point is that indispensability breeds key person risk. Now, in individual contributor roles, deep expert knowledge can actually be a plus. But as a leader, it's completely contrary to the mindset you need. Knowledge has to be shared, managed, and made available. Knowledge hoarding is the enemy of collaboration, and eventually, it's going to cause a problem. So your job as a leader is to reduce risk, build capability, and ensure the profitability and growth of your team through superior value creation. Any single points of failure will threaten this position. Point number five, indispensability promotes a knowing culture, not a learning culture. Once again, your objective as a leader is to create a learning culture. People work together, they share information, and they collaborate. Constant learning, robust challenge, and curiosity are the things that dominate. Everyone wants the best result for the team, and they don't just try to be successful individually. All of this, of course, within a framework of strong single-point accountability. In a knowing company, knowledge is power, and this breeds perfectionism, opaqueness, and a passive defensive culture. Now, in case you're wondering, this isn't good, and performance is almost always inferior. And finally, point number six, if you think you're indispensable, it's going to desensitize you to obvious risks. I learned pretty early in my career that there's risk in being an expert. A consulting firm I worked for trained, developed, and invested in me to become an expert in a new software development language. And all of this went absolutely swimmingly for a while. I became one of the foremost experts in Australia in this particular product. But when that product was no longer favoured by the blue chip companies who were my clients, guess what happened? My knowledge and expertise were devalued overnight. My stock plummeted because those skills were no longer in such high demand. Now that's a risk I learned not to fall for again. So just think for a minute about your unique skills and knowledge. How is technology going to erode your value in the market over the next 5 to 10 years? As I like to do, I'm going to finish with some practical guidance for how to make yourself incredibly valuable without trying to be indispensable. Here are my three top tips, and I've created a free PDF resource which you can download at yourceomentor.com/episode297. My first tip is, don't be afraid to let your identity evolve from being an individual contributor to a leader. Just remember, your leadership skills are completely transferable. They never go out of fashion and they never lose their currency. Once you learn how to identify and optimize value, to build a team culture of superior performance, to create a talent pipeline of future leaders, and to bring out every individual's best performance, well, there isn't a company on the planet that wouldn't benefit from your services. So don't hold onto your technical identity with white-knuckled fear. Instead, let go of that and step into your mantle as a professional leader. My second hot tip, build capability in your team every single day. The very best leaders do one really important thing. They develop other leaders. Now, your goal should be to create as many high performers as possible. People on your team who could step into your role sooner rather than later. You should aim to have at least one ready-now successor for your role at any given point. Someone who you'd be confident could grow into the role within, say, 6 to 12 months, if you were no longer there for any reason. Now, I got really good at developing ready-now successors. In fact, when I was chief executive at CS Energy, I knew that on any given day, at least half of my executive team probably thought that they could do my job better than I was doing it. And that is exactly what I wanted. If you want team performance, you've got to build capability. And that means no tourists and no passengers. And finally, my third hot tip, instead of trying to be indispensable, make yourself redundant. You want to open up opportunities, not to try to defend your position. If you're really good at your job and you lead your team to deliver extraordinary value, your company's going to be lying awake at night trying to work out how they can keep you. Now, I always thought that if my company didn't value my hard work, my skill, my talent, then I was in the wrong place anyway. I'd be happy to find a better, more suitable opportunity somewhere else. You shouldn't be afraid of losing your job. You should be afraid of stagnating in the role you're in. The whole concept of indispensability flies in the face of great leadership. You want your company to fear losing you, but not because you have something they can't replace, rather because they know you're a person for the future who's going to grow, thrive, and have greater impact on the company in the future the higher you go up. If only they can work out how to keep you. You need to take on a mantra that reinforces this in your head every day. Now, of course, it's going to be different for you, but my mantra went something like this. I know exactly how much value I'm bringing to this company. Now, if they don't value my contribution, it's simply not the right place for me, which means the right role is waiting just around the corner, and it's going to be more challenging and more rewarding than anything I've done before. I'm on the fast track. And that means that from time to time, I'm going to have to move on because I've outgrown the company and the role that I'm in. Now, to me, that sounds quite a bit healthier and a hell of a lot more exciting than trying to dig in like a tick to protect my current position. All right, that brings us to the end of episode 297. Thanks so much for joining us. And remember, at Your CEO Mentor, our purpose is to improve the quality of leaders globally. So please make sure you share this episode with the leaders that you're close to. I look forward to next week's episode where I take on another listener Q&A with M. Until then, I know you'll take every opportunity you can to be a no-bullshit leader.